You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
The headline of this was Spencer Ware's injury adds to offensive uncertainty. And one of the comments just says, nope.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Okay, Jack R. Powers. Fine. Bleep me. I'm a dope. Durf.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back in to Almost Entirely Sports here on ESPN Kansas City. I come to you, dear listener, from a place of congestion and sneezing. But it's almost the end of our week. We've sneezed through so many days. And whenever this is over, I'm going to go home and lay down again. See if I can get another solid 14 hours of the coma position. But not yet. Because right now, we're going to talk about some Chiefs things. So far today, we've talked about decoy hoodies, relationship advice, unicorns, and was there something else?
Cow farts.
Oh, and methane. Yeah. And now we're talking to Craig Stout, who's back with Arrowhead Pride, and he wrote a really interesting article about the Chiefs' young edge rushers, mostly Breeland Speaks and Tano Pastor, the two guys that definitely have the most to be learned about them. But first, Craig, I have some very important beer-based questions for you. What is I saw in this article you use the phrase my brewery. Do you own a brewery? You're a home brew. Oh, okay. How could you please explain that to me before I proceed with the rest of my questions?
Home brewing. Oh man, you got another couple hours?
We've got 30 minutes. But if we end up doing nothing but that and have to talk about your article on Monday, we can do that also.
Yeah. No, I brew my own beer. I have been for about 8 or 9 years now. It's a process. It usually takes most of a day while I brew, and then stick it in a fermenter and wait a couple months. And when it's all said and done, I add about 5 gallons worth of beer and just keep doing that and keep myself drinking my own supply.
Okay.
That's the short version, yeah.
So what is your, like, what's your expertise? What's the, first of all, I hope it's called a Craig Stout. Like, that really seems perfect, but is your...
I mean, it does, but my expertise, my best beer is a Poe Stout, named after former defensive tackle.
Oh, fantastic.
Don Harry Poe.
That's incredible. Okay, yes. So... I've never really enjoyed beer. This is not something that's ever really come naturally to me. I've decided in most cases if I'm either going to be offered beer or like some super like sweet cocktail, I'm just gonna have the super sweet cocktail and be a 16-year-old girl's birthday party. Can you tell me what I'm doing wrong?
Everything.
Okay, good. Perfect. Am I drinking? Is it just, is cheap beer all bad?
All of it? No, not necessarily. But you also have to take that with a frame of reference.
Okay.
I typically avoid as many of the, big domestics, your Buds, your Bud Lights, your, Coors Lights,
right,
things like that. I avoid that stuff. You know, there's lots of people that, you consider something like a Shiner Bock a cheap beer because it, comparatively, it is pretty cheap. But that's something that you can get somebody in on, a nice, light, little darker beer, easier to drink, a little sweeter if you're looking for something like that.
Okay.
And hopefully now Shiner will send me some beer.
Yeah, no kidding. If I get any, I'll tell them to hook you up. Today I was trying to get an endorsement from Puff's Tissues. Because they've gotten me through this hard week of allergies. They tweeted back at me, but have not offered to ship me anything yet. Okay, well, I think you answered the question I was going to ask, which is what is the best cheap like introductory beer? Is it Shiner Bock?
Shiner Bock's one of them. Fat Tire. I know a lot of people like Boulevard Wheat. Wheat beers tend to be the easiest transition to go from your domestics to more of a craft beer scene. But then, you move along from them and
Okay, I think I've already learned something. This is fantastic. I guess now we can talk about the thing that you wrote for Arrowhead Pride. If we want to. I feel like also I wouldn't mind hearing the homebrewing process in incredible detail.
Oh, we could talk Chiefs. I'm better at talking football.
Do you use a bathtub to brew beer in? That's my last question.
No, okay. No. This ain't moonshine.
Okay.
I brew my moonshine in the bathtub.
Perfect. So if you want to read this article that we're going to talk to Craig about, you can go to Arrowhead Pride. It's on the front page right now. What to expect out of the Chiefs' young edge rushers. And this is a tremendously well-timed topic and something that I'm glad that you went and did the research on and tried to give us a kind of a frame of mind to be viewing these guys through. And also, Kent had an interesting question that he put out that you break down that we'll get to in a second. But before we get into the nitty-gritty of each of the things that you did, what was your general mindset going into this article and kind of your methodology in answering the questions you wanted to ask?
Well, it really started yesterday with Kent posting a poll saying, you know, asking the question on Twitter of how many sacks everybody thought that Breland Speaks would get during his rookie contract. Mm-hmm. And the number that he threw out there was 22 and a half sacks. Mm-hmm. And right immediately off the top of my head, I think, well, surely he'll hit the over on that. That seems like a low enough number. Mm-hmm. I mean, the numbers that I came up with, that's sack numbers of 3, 5, 7, and 8. Mm-hmm. And when you put it that way, it doesn't sound so, you know, overwhelming.
No, not at all. That seems totally plausible.
Correct. So then we started looking a little closer at it and come to find out in the past decade, there's only 26 players that have done that during their rookie contract. That's it. It's shockingly low number for the number of edge prospects that do get drafted.
Yeah.
So I then decided that I was going to look into what were the obstacles for getting these players on the field. I mean, D. Ford, of course, is the first to come to mind for most Chiefs fans because D. struggled to see the field early. And so when he struggles to see the field early, well, then, you know, he's not really able to get production and grow as a player. And we saw the 1 year that he was able to be on the field be a double-digit sack year. Mm-hmm. Well, so I decided that I'd look at some of the players that were on that list of the 26 players and see when they started playing more of their snaps.
Yep.
Well, come to find out, the guys at the top were typically guys that came in immediately, started, your Von Millers, your Justin Houston, Khalil Mack, you know, the stud pass rushers that are around right now, all of those guys tended to come in and immediately start. Well, looking at the Kansas City Chiefs rotation right now, it's hard to say whether or not the young pass rushers are going to be able to get in and really make a contribution early. So that led me down another route of playing on first and second downs. And a lot of the edge players that I found that were non-force players, which force players are Justice Mosqueda's method of measuring edge players coming out in the draft, typically looking at college production, athletic ability, you know, bendability, things like that. Well, Breland Speaks is not a force player. Mm-hmm. Neither is Tano. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at the guys on that list that weren't force players, and those are guys like Alden Smith, Chandler Jones, Brian Arakpo, Jason Pierre-Paul. And I found that those players were the ones that almost immediately were getting rotation on first and second downs. They were strong enough players to where they could be trusted in the run game, and they got early down snaps. Well, it then led me down this correlation, and, you know, through gathering a bunch of data yesterday, I did find that there was a correlation to non-force players playing early on early downs. You get more reps, you get more time on the field, and more ability to practice, which under current NFL practice rules is tough to get. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of these guys in practice aren't able to really get the reps that they need to grow as players. So they were getting them on the field, and it was showing up. And so these guys were the guys that were up above the 22.5 sack mark in their rookie year.
I think that correlation is just fantastic. Whenever I was reading this, that was the point when, oh, there's where the logic comes in. And frankly, and I'll let you tell me what you think, obviously, but it starts to put together a little bit of the piece of the puzzle, of pieces of the puzzle for Breland Speaks, because Dee Ford is not a guy that I'm ever comfortable having out there on first and second down, because even at this point in his career, I don't trust him to hold down the run game literally at all. I don't trust him to set the edge literally at all, and that's something that Justin Houston is incredibly good at, so it didn't take him very long to earn the trust of the defense around him. So does that shine some light, in your opinion at least, on why the Chiefs did go to Breland Speaks, because he has the physical tools to get more first and second down playing time than maybe we would have assumed before you went through all of these details?
Oh, absolutely. And I have, when they drafted Tano, passing on last year, mm-hmm. I was one of the ones that really wanted him to get early down snaps mm-hmm. because he's a big body. Yeah. And as it turns out, he's a little more of an athlete than he is, a stud football player.
Yeah.
Breland Speaks is almost, I don't feel like I'm going out on a big limb here, but Breland Speaks is a better football player than either Dee Ford or Tano Passignon was coming out of college.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Tano and Dee have a much higher ceiling than Breland does, but Breland has a higher floor.
Right.
Like, yes, I fully believe that they drafted Breland with the understanding that Frank Zombo is playing half the snaps
right.
over the past couple years because he's good against the run and he knows where he needs to be. Well, might as well get a guy that can do what Frank can do
mm-hmm.
and maybe offer some growth as he's going along there. And then, looking at my data and seeing that guys that are able to get those snaps early, there's maybe a chance for him to blossom into a 7 or 8 sack a year guy and just be consistent because he's out there on the field.
It's the first thing that I've heard about Speaks and what the Chiefs are trying to do that has really helped make all of this make more sense to me, because I think in a best case scenario, Dee Ford is the guy that you bring in on third down. Dee Ford is not the guy that you put opposite Justin Houston throughout an entire game and feel good about. He's not that good. He's not that type of player because he can't be trusted in the first two downs, which is, which is an indictment, I guess, on what the Chiefs got in return for that draft pick. But if Breland Speaks, well, I should say, at this point, I think with the draft, we ended up kind of figured out altogether the Chiefs largely drafted role players, or at least didn't draft guys for fireworks, although Dorian O'Daniel or Monty Watts might be able to challenge that a little bit. Breland Speaks becoming Justin Houston is almost unfathomable at this point. And even, like you said, that Tano Passignon has a higher ceiling totally makes sense. But if Breland Speaks is Frank Zombo in the run game and a better pass rusher by 25%, I understand why the Chiefs did that. I don't love it. I'd still like to see Isaiah Oliver on this team, but I get it.
Oh, and I understand that line of thinking, too. And, the reason that I was okay with Breland from the get-go is this defense needed a change in mentality.
Now, yep.
I've been calling them soft for 2 years now, and they were. I mean, I pointed out again after we drafted Breland that, in that Titans game, when Travis Kelce got, hit in the head and mm-hmm. knocked out of the game, that team stood around because that was the guy on the team that, would have done something
mm-hmm.
that was, that wasn't soft, that was willing to retaliate a little bit. You get a personal foul penalty, but you let that guy know, nah, that's not cool.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they drafted a bunch of guys this year that are foundation players
mm-hmm.
that have that mentality. And I call them foundation players because I believe a lot of these guys get a second contract in Kansas
mm-hmm.
City.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're that style of player.
Right.
They're not going to blow the doors off. They're not going to, be the highest paid player at their position, but you're going to have a guy like Breland Speaks or Nadi or O'Daniel or Watts that are going to be around through the second contract?
Yeah.
And are those Chiefs that are around and contribute for a long time?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And it's still the hesitation that I get in trading up for both Speaks and Nadi does give me at least a twinge of frustration still. But I feel better kind of understanding that perspective. So let's zoom out a little bit, because you talked about this defense being soft, and you know, once they started losing the guys that could set the tone last year, it really began to all fall apart. What was your off-season feeling on Bob Sutton and the state of the defense before getting into the draft?
I thought going into the draft that they had a chance to add some pieces that made them a better defense than they were last year. Last year's defense was older. Last year's defense was slower. Last year's defense was soft.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like the Kendall Fuller addition was wonderful. Mm-hmm. I love inside linebackers, so mm-hmm. Reggie Ragland getting another year to really bulk up and have a first real offseason of his NFL career mm-hmm. and grabbing a guy like Anthony Hitchens, I felt like the pieces were there with Eric Berry returning that they could have been a better defense if they added certain players.
Right.
Now, the players that I was thinking were more of the splashy, athletic, you know, like I think everybody in Kansas City was hoping mm-hmm. for.
Mm-hmm.
But after the draft, I'm seeing that the plan isn't necessarily this year. These are guys that can come in and contribute this year, but these are guys that next year and the year after that and the year after that are going to be consistently good players that make an overall impact that you're not having to spend and divert energy towards coaching as much. Mm-hmm. You know, and this team has two edge players that are athletes in Dee Ford and Tano Passignon.
Mm-hmm.
It makes perfect sense that you would get a guy that shows up and does his job and does it well
mm-hmm.
and is mean, you know. So I think the defense is truly going to be better than last year.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not a Bob Sutton fan, mm-hmm. and I haven't been for a little while, been calling for his head since about 2015.
Totally understand.
But, yeah, but they made a point when the mm-hmm. offseason came, when they kept Bob Sutton, they made a point to lay the blame for last year's defense at the feet of the players.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether you agree with that or not, they made that explicitly clear. And that every move that they have made this offseason indicates that. They have overhauled that defense entirely.
Yeah, I mean, I need to go actually do the actual counting of it. But especially the defense that was on the field for the Titans game, even just the starters for the Titans game, I think there might be, I don't know, again, I'm guessing, but like three or four returning guys from that defense starting this year. It is tremendous, the amount of overhaul.
For sure, for sure. And not only that, they're making a point to say, we're going to play more press coverage.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to one gap more. We're going to keep a true nickel on the field rather than using, you know, Daniel Sorensen as a linebacker all game long. And then they went out and they got a guy who's arguably a better dime linebacker in Dorian O'Daniel to play that role this year when they do use it. It's just, as much as I complain about Bob Sutton, those are the things that can make him better by surrounding him with those players to fit in those schemes rather than trying to shoehorn some older, slower guys mm-hmm. into those spots.
Do you think it's fair to say that there's more pressure on Brett Veach in this draft class now because there aren't any big swings? You expect him to definitely at least, you know, get on base, to use a baseball metaphor, with all of these guys. And also, is there has to be pressure on Bob Sutton now, right? Like, this has to be at least a year where you see improvement, because for him to stick around and have all of this turnover, it has to be a big year for Bob Sutton, right?
Oh, absolutely. And the numbers may not explicitly say that it is, but it definitely could still be an overall impact. I mean, the defense is going to change the way that they play purely because you have Pat Mahomes and what should be a little more high-octane offense that's maybe predicated on some more quick strike attack, you know, get up early and then pin the ears back with the pass rushers and really attack the opposing offense, knowing that if you give up a touchdown, it's not the end of the world. You're not having to rely on a nine-minute drive on the other side of the field and squeaking out some third and shorts. You have a guy on the opposite or on the opposite side that can put some more points on the field, on the board and help out the defense. So, I mean, Bob Sutton's points per game last year was 15th. I understand that yardage was terrible, and it sure seemed like, you know, death by a thousand cuts in a lot of the games that they lost last year. But Bob does know how to put a low point scoring offense or defense on the field. Now, I can see them being about that 15th spot this year, but if the offense is better and there's more turnovers that can be created and more sacks, more advantageous positions that the defense can be in, I do think that they'll be better. And I think that Bob probably does get to stick around because of that.
And I think it makes sense. Also, you know, last year's draft was largely about the offense. It was about going to get Patrick Mahomes and grabbing Kareem Hunt. Obviously, you know, Tanner Passanio being a part of it. But it was about getting your quarterback and running back of the future. Now those guys are in place. This is the year where they spent like literally almost every single move of the offseason on the defense. It makes sense, and you've single-handedly, Craig, made me feel better about Breland Speak. So thank you for doing that, and thank you for trying to give me a better cheap beer option to try to grow my childish palate.
Hey, I'm glad to help on both of those fronts.
You can follow Craig on Twitter at BarleyHop, which is like also just such a good. I mean, everything about your whole brand here, the beer related branding is perfect. Even your last name, Craig Stout at Barley Hop on Twitter. Go read his article on Arrowhead Pride, and Craig, we'll be sure to talk to you again sometime this offseason.
All right, thanks.
Oh, I can't. Beards, I've broken the phones. You've got it.
You locked him in. That's
no,
what you did.
No, I broke the phones. There we go. Now he can't talk to us anymore. That's all. Really good stuff. Seriously, reading that article made me feel better about the logic behind going and getting Breland Speaks. I'm happy to tell you whenever my opinion changes based off of logic that someone else gave, and the idea that Breland Speaks is going to be out there getting more first and second down snaps is very helpful. Because of all the places where this team has gotten beaten and gotten beaten on the ground, like, that's the thing about D. Ford's game that drives you crazy. Now, the one thing that I still do hold to is that I would like to have believed that Tanner Passanio was ready to be that guy this year.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought I was going to get through without coughing, and then I had an explosive cough, and I don't know if I got to the cough button in
no,
time.
You didn't.
I got through most of it.
There's a little blip at the beginning of
yeah,
that.
That's how it works. I would have liked to have believed that Tanner Passanio is going to be that guy this year. This still does worry me about the development of him. But if Passanio, with another year of development and being the third or fourth guy, I mean really fourth, I guess, if Speaks is jumping like we just talked about, then it makes me feel a little bit better. Not entirely better, but a little bit better. And also, the pressure on Bob Sutton at this point is very, very real. And I think it's, like, appropriately earned pressure. Pressure for the right reasons. Reasonable, hey, we've given you everything now, pressure. Also, though, this is something I've been trying to get to for, like, 2 weeks now as a kind of generic any point off-season topic. I mentioned it at the end right there with Craig, but Bob Sutton last year was given some additions, but it was mostly about getting your quarterback of the future. Your running back, you got Passanio, but he was a developmental piece. The mindset last year was very clearly different. It was about settling in on the offense. This year, the offense is settled in. You went and got Sammy Watkins, and now it's hands off, let it roll. Now give Bob Sutton all of the pieces that he wants and needs, and hope that that works out. It's a strategy that I understand. And I really appreciate that perspective on Breland Speaks. All right, we're done for the week. I get a whole day off tomorrow, but I have two graduation parties, and so one's outside. Like, I'm going to absolutely die.
You need to wear, like, a hazmat suit.
Oh, I do. The problem is it's Renee's graduation party and then also her brother's graduation party, so meeting some of her extended family in a hazmat suit might send off some bad tones. Talk to you next week. Bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.